Okay, this is Gary D'Amato, sports columnist for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JS Online. I'm with Matt Velasquez, Bucks beat writer. It's been a little while. In fact, Matt, it's been a while since we've done a podcast, Bucks podcast, because the last time we did one, the Bucks had a different coach. there's a lot of things to talk about today, and let's tackle some subjects. Let's start out with, everyone who follows the Bucks knows that they had some injuries, in the game. Giannis and Matthew Dellavedova both turned their ankles. How bad are those injuries, and are either of those players going to miss significant time?
Yeah, so good to be talking to you again, Gary. I know this is going to be our last one for a little bit as you head out to South Korea this week for the Olympics.
Right.
But yeah, the Bucks just had a rash of injuries recently. You know, going back even further than yesterday's game, I can start by saying, you know, Giannis will be fine. He said he could have gone back into the game if needed and was glad he wasn't needed. And then Delly, we're waiting on further tests, possibly an MRI. We asked Joe Prunty if he was going to have an MRI, and he, you know, didn't have a clear answer for that. But I would assume with an ankle sprain that severe that you would get it checked out to make sure there's not any further damage. So he could miss some time, but we'll get some more insight about that later today. But going back to Thursday in Minnesota, I mean, it's been a scary couple days for the Bucks injury wise, with Malcolm Brogdon going out with his quadriceps tendon tear or partial tear that'll keep him out for 6 to 8 weeks. A scary play right from the moment he got off the ground. You knew that something was wrong when he's not getting up there to dunk and get it up, you know, barely up over the rim. And then later in that game, I knew it sent Twitter into a frenzy, as it probably should. When Giannis was playing in the fourth quarter in a 20-point game, and then he comes out and takes off his shoe and is getting checked out by the trainers, and he's saying his left ankle hurts. And after the game, I just stopped by. He wasn't ready to do his full-on post-game talk, but I had to get back to finish my story on deadline. So I kind of asked him, hey, Giannis, like, what happened with your ankle? He's, oh, I twisted it, you know, pretty bad. I can't walk right. I'm limping. Yeah, so we'll have to see how I feel. And I was like, wait, seriously? Like, this is how bad is it? And he's like, oh no, I can't walk right on it. And he kind of like reiterated the same stuff, you know. So, but good. Luckily for him, he was able to play the next night against the Knicks. The Bucks got Eric Bledsoe back, who had sat out that Minnesota game with his own left ankle soreness. They got Jabari Parker back that game, and then they come out here to Brooklyn on Sunday, and boom, you have, you know, Delly get hurt and Giannis, you know, go down to the ground with a scary looking ankle injury that luckily it wasn't worse than it was, all in like a 3 minute span. So, you know, the Bucks just, you know, can they go a game without any injury related stuff, maybe two, and then like, you know, go from there, because you never want to see a team, go through these types of injury issues. You never want to see a player get hurt. And the Bucks just like recently it's been constant.
It's eerily reminiscent of when Chris Middleton came back last year and Jabari got hurt. Was it the same day? I think it was the same game, wasn't it?
That was the same game, yeah. And then that's what everybody was thinking. That's what I thought. You know, when Brogdon got hurt, and you know, when you see a guy go up with a non-contact injury and grabbing around their leg, you start to fear the worst. You worry that it could be an ACL or it could be something with his knee. You know, luckily for him, it wasn't that. I know DJ Wilson, he helped him get back to the locker room. He and Xavier Munford kind of, you know, supported him on the way to the locker room, and they were nervous it was a knee. You know, Malcolm had said to, you know, that he heard a pop or he felt a pop, and you know, DJ immediately was worried, but then he was also back there while they started doing some more tests, and he heard that it wasn't a knee, it was probably his quad. And so, you know, he felt a little bit better about that. You know, but it's just a scary situation, to, you know, especially with Jabari coming back. You know, everybody's mind just goes straight to that. Like, how come this keeps happening to the Bucks? It's just kind of their bad random luck.
They're drinking from the same water the Packers are, it looks like.
Yeah. But no one wants any of that.
No. But so is it safe to say, pending further testing, we think Dellavedova is probably going to have an MRI to determine the extent of what he did to his ankle. But pending tests, it looks like he's out for at least a little while. But Giannis comes back pretty quickly. Is that how you how you view this?
Yeah, that's what I expect. I think the best case for Dele would probably be missing Tuesday's game against the Knicks, just based on the way he responded and reacted to that ankle sprain. It didn't look good. I mean, no, you know, he showed a lot of emotion out there. He was really frustrated. When he was able to walk under his own power, but he was limping pretty heavily, went straight back to the locker room afterwards. You know, that's never a good sign. And he was clearly upset about it in the locker room yesterday. You could see that he was frustrated as he sat in the trainer's room. But then he was able to get his own shoe back on. You could see like under his pant leg, it looked like he had some kind of ankle, a wrap under his, of his ankle, but he was able to get his own shoes on. Which is good. I guess whatever swelling there was low enough that he's able to get his own shoes on. But he declined to talk to the media after the game, which, you know, I kind of understand when you're going through a stressful situation like that. You don't know how bad it is, and
right,
you kind of just want to move on. So you don't really belabor the point. But just by all signs that came out, it didn't seem like he'd be available for Tuesday. But Giannis, he said he could have gone back into the game if he needed to on Sunday. And I'm guessing they'll kind of treat him very gingerly, or, you know, during practice. They won't make him do very much of anything at practice later today in Manhattan. And then, you know, he should be good to go. And then they get two days of off days, of practice days, before they play the Heat on Friday, which is a big game, you know, for the Bucks, considering the both teams are battling for the playoffs, and this is their third and final game against the Heat, and they've lost both to Miami so far. So that's one they'll definitely want to get, and you would hope that after 2 days off, that Giannis would be good to go.
Yeah, let's switch gears and talk about something a little happier, Jabari's return. I wrote, you know, I thought he looked really good that first game coming back. I remember when he came back the first time from his ACL, he was really hesitant. I remember he played on the perimeter, and he shot a few jump shots, but he didn't attack the rim. He didn't go inside. It's just a matter of when you have an ACL for the first time, you don't know, despite rehabbing it and doing everything right. I mean, when you come back in a game situation, you have to learn how to trust it. But I thought this time, coming back from his second ACL, Matt, I thought he looked like he really didn't miss much time. I mean, he attacked the rim. He drove the lane. He was physical. And I think that bodes well. I think it shows that he's going to bounce back from this one maybe a lot faster than the first one. So what's your take on that?
Oh yeah, definitely. It was great to see him out there. You know, one of the positives for me was that this is the Jabari that I've been seeing, like in practices, like in the facility before games, like when maybe other people don't have that same access. You know, that's what I've been seeing. I've been seeing it for months. I mean, you watched him in September, and he looked like he could play in September. He was aggressive and confident, and he had been ahead of schedule in his rehab, which allowed him to, you know, have a little bit of extra time to kind of play into game shape, where they were trying to get him as much game action as possible for like a 6 week period, where when he wasn't with the Bucks and playing church league with some of the guys on the team who don't play as much. If you haven't heard before, you know, church league is kind of what they call it when, you know, some of the guys at the end of the bench don't play very much. They play like pickup games, and they're they're timed, and they're, you know, a little bit more official than your normal pickup games. They just call them church league. So he did a bunch of that, played with the Wisconsin Herd in practices where they would go 5-on-5 and go hard, harder than the Bucks might be going because of their schedule and the limitations that, you know, needing to be ready for games had them under. So he's been getting ready for a while. And every time I've seen him, he's looked great. He's looked strong, confident. I talked to director of performance, Troy Flanagan, who's kind of the head honcho of their medical and training staffs. And, you know, he said that, you know, Jabari is faster, stronger, and leaner than he has been in the past. That some of his metrics that in terms of what he can lift or how he's performing in drills or workouts or lifting sessions, you know, not, aren't just his best, but are outperforming some of his teammates. And I think part of the goal of you know, when you see him, you can definitely tell that he's thinned down a little bit, and he's taken off a little bit of the muscle mass that he had before. But it's I think aimed at having him play at a lighter weight, which puts less stress on his knees. You know, and when talking to Troy Flanagan, you know, I asked him about, you know, guys who have had two ACL injuries before and come back and been fine. Like what type of research they've done into that. And he said, well, it's not super common in the NBA, but if you look at soccer players, you know, that happens a lot. You know, that's a kind of a, you know, a major injury, especially in that sport. And you see people have that injury twice over and then come back and have long careers, and they're trying to, you know, to mimic that in a basketball setting and to find ways to help him get stronger and more prepared. And I think you're right. I think he was incredibly confident in his physical abilities, which I think speaks well to his rehab process and all the help that he had and all the guidance he had as to how to best prepare himself. And then having gone through it before, like, he eventually got to the point where he was fully trusting himself and was fine. So I think now he can draw on that experience and say, you know what, once I'm out there, I know what I can do, and I'm just going to go out there and do it. And you know, he got up to 17 and a half minutes on Sunday. You know, looked fine, attacked the basket well. They're still figuring out how to get him to be part of the offense. I think he's still kind of operating in a way where they don't have a chemistry yet or a flow yet. But that'll come. And that's something that they have, you know, obviously they're trying to do. And as he plays more, that'll come over time.
Yeah, definitely good to have him back. And I know Bucks fans are happy to have him back. Okay, Matt, Thursday, 2 p.m., the trade deadline. It'll actually be 5 a.m. the next day in Pyeongchang, South Korea, where I'll hopefully be sleeping and oblivious to any last-minute moves the Bucks might make.
What, you're not going to stay up and keep an eye on things?
I'll set my alarm clock, yeah, and go online right away and see if they made any moves. So what do you anticipate? Let's be honest, first of all, the Bucks are not a very good rebounding team. Hopefully Jabari helps in that aspect.
They're the worst.
So they can definitely use another big guy, a good big guy. Nothing against Henson. And Henson had a great game yesterday. I mean, what, 18 rebounds? Is that what he finished with?
Yeah, 19 points, 18 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tremendous game. I mean, if he does that every night, we're not talking about it, the fact that they need a big guy. But obviously he doesn't do that every night. And I got to tell you, I'm a little bit down on Thon Maker. I don't think he's progressed. In fact, I think he's regressed from last year. But again, there's a guy who still needs seasoning. He's young. He's got to put on some weight. I don't know if he's got the kind of frame that will let him put on weight, a lot of weight. He's just, I think, naturally just a very skinny guy. But anyway, so they need help inside. Are they going to, do you think they make a move to get another big guy? Or what's out there, and what do you think they're going to do?
You know, I think they're definitely interested. I think as we've gotten closer and closer to the deadline, the refrain has been the same as it was basically the minute they traded Greg Monroe. They're in the market for a big guy. I mean, everybody knows it. No one's really surprised by it. It's not really news. It's kind of like, okay, well, when you trade away Greg Monroe, a guy who anchored your team inside, was a physical presence, got rebounds, you know, scored in the low post. You don't have anybody on the current roster who does those things in the same way he did and doesn't bring the same presence he did. And so that's the one, you know, glaring hole that they have right now. And so the question is going to be, you know, how much would they be willing to give up in order to get somebody? You know, and which teams would be possibly willing to take on salary? Because, you know, the Bucks don't necessarily have a ton of pieces unless you're, you know, depending on who you're throwing in there. If you want to match salaries for some of the higher paid guys, you know, would they be willing to take on the guys who the Bucks have at higher salaries and the contracts that they have? Because it's not just that they have guys on higher salaries, but all of them have multiple years on their contracts. You know, so if you wanted to move a, you know, John Henson, Mirza Teletovic, which his injury complicates things, if you want to move either those guys or Deli or even Tony Snell, like, you know, to try and match salaries, if that's the team, a player that the other team would like to have, you're getting any of those players for multiple years at, you know, 9 or 10 million thereabouts, depending on the guy. So that's a lot to, you know, have to figure out. You know, I think a lot of teams, if they were going to get that in return, would probably want some kind of sweetener. But, you know, the sweeteners the Bucks have to offer are either young players on, you know, low contracts. And do you want to trade any of those guys is a big question. You know, do you want to trade Malcolm Brogdon? Well, now that the injury kind of complicates things, but would you want to trade him? I don't know if that's necessarily a great move, depending on who you're getting back. Do you want to trade, you know, Thon Maker? Well, maybe you think, oh, well, we've gotten all we can out of him and he's okay to move on from, but he's still really young and he still has an interesting skill set in terms of being able to spread the court. So, you know, that's something that you have to think about. The Bucks have been, you know, reportedly actively shopping Rashad Vaughn, which really shouldn't surprise anyone, considering he's making, I think, $1.8 million this year. And they already declined to pick up his option for next year, which will make him a free agent this summer. So they've already indicated that they don't value Rashad Vaughn as a player for their future. And so if you know he's going to walk this summer, or, I mean, theoretically, he could still re-sign this summer, but at a lower number than his rookie contract would stipulate. That's still a possibility, but that's, you know, not a high likelihood of happening. You know, so of course they're going to be shopping Rashad Vaughn, somebody to throw into trades. That's, you know, that's kind of why he's still with the team, I would assume. Because you don't just cut somebody ahead of the trade deadline when you could possibly, you know, if you're in a situation where you need to match salaries, you try and, you know, keep guys around you could kind of just throw into trades if you need to.
I don't think he has much trade value, though, personally. I mean, if he was a player, he'd have shown it by now.
Well, he kind of has some in the sense that, you know, like I said, if you're just trying to match salaries where he's not the main part of the trade, but you just need to throw him in there at the end, like there's always that. And, you know, another team might want his bird rights and want to be able to maybe sign him over the summer at a low number. Because he's still only 21, you know, it's not really much to debate about. He feels like he hasn't gotten enough opportunities, at least this year. In the past, he's gotten opportunities, but this year he's played like 8 minutes a game, like 21 games, mostly mop up minutes. There's one stretch where he was getting some action, but it was 5 games. But yeah, so he's one of those guys. But getting more into like what the Bucks, what and who the Bucks might be looking for. The rumors have obviously been swirling since November that they've been interested in DeAndre Jordan. There's no reason to believe they wouldn't be interested in DeAndre Jordan.
Right. But he's killed him.
of course, you know.
But yeah.
The hard part about DeAndre is that I believe he's 30, or he's maybe even older than 30 now that I think about it. But he's getting older, you know, and for older big guys, you know, you start to especially worry. He's going on 30. You know, so you start to worry about that. He's also on a contract where he's getting paid $22 million this year, and he has a player option for $24 million next year. So if you're bringing that type of person on, you're not going to have – and he opts in, which, you know, there's a chance he could opt in, considering if he doesn't think the market will necessarily bear out for him in a positive way going forward and he wants to do a money grab. But then you could also – you know, he might opt out. In which case, you know, maybe be betting on himself that he can get like a 3-year deal and want that long-term stability or something like that, maybe for less money. But if that happens, then whatever you traded for him is just for a rental because you can't be 100% certain that he re-signs with your team. So how much are you comfortable giving up for someone who can walk? And, you know, that's a huge question. I know a lot of people have talked about Jabari Parker as someone they could possibly trade in such a deal. And I'm kind of dubious as to whether or not they would do that. I would doubt it personally, just because all the indications seem you know, that I've heard and seen. This team, like, is very interested in seeing how much Jabari can help them this season. And then they can kind of figure things out in restricted free agency over the summer, where they'd have the opportunity or the ability to match any and all offers that teams send his way.
Right.
You know, I know I talked to one of the owners, Wes Edens, on the day that Jason Kidd was fired, and I was just asking about, you know, how this move was proactive, because they've wanted to be proactive instead of reactive. That's been something that general manager John Horst said, that the owners have said, all those types of things. And he said, oh, it was really a proactive move. And they think that, you know, Jabari could be, you know, this team with Jabari is as deep as any other team in the East in the playoffs. And that they could, you know, they have the talent to play with anybody. And, you know, that I wasn't asking about Jabari, but he brought Jabari on his own. And, you know, I took that as him being genuine and saying that that's what they believe. They believe with Jabari back, and if he, they believe he can become what he has been in the past, and that he could be a major help to them in the playoffs. And so that doesn't really send the signs of Jabari being someone that is going to be traded, you know, especially because he offers them that flexibility of, like, being able to figure out what they want to do this summer. And they would have his rights in terms of a restricted free agent. And they could kind of, like, work around that. And they could also sign him next summer and then trade him once he's under contract. You know, so, like, that doesn't mean they're stuck with him, you know. And if they go into the luxury tax by signing him this summer, they just need to get out from underneath it. Or they need to get underneath the tax before the end of the next season. Otherwise, they get hit with taxpayer penalties and all that type of stuff. So, you know, especially with Brogdonhurt, I mean, if you're the Clippers – you would want, you know, Brogdon, or you would want Brogdon and Maker. You want some young guys, maybe a pick. But as the time of the deadline gets closer, you know, you would think that with the Clippers having already traded Blake Griffin, that they're kind of making a move to, you know, maybe not be in the playoffs and try and kind of rebuild. They've claimed that they're not doing that. But that's kind of the same posturing that you're going to get every year. So we'll have to see what his value is and, you know, if you're the Bucks, how much you're willing to risk it. And if they're not going to get DeAndre, there are a couple other guys that, you know, they might be interested in. Brooke Lopez, is in a very similar situation to Jordan. He's in the same city. But he's in a similar situation that he's on a $22 million contract this year, but he doesn't have any options for the summer. So he would just be a pure rental. So the risk is maybe less because you know exactly what you're getting, and, you know, you're not going to have that loose end in the summer. And maybe you can, like, in free agency next summer, after he plays for you, you can negotiate and try and find a longer term agreement. Maybe you can do that, but who would the Lakers want in return? They're obviously rebuilding. They're probably not trying to take on salaries, because they're trying to keep things open for, you know, as the question was posed to Golden State GM Bob Myers, a 6'8 power forward, you know, of some stature. So they're trying to keep the books open. So if you were going to trade big for big and send, like, Henson and, you know, Vaughn and some trade filler over to the Lakers, you know, they might not be into that because Henson's going to eat up some money out of their cap for next year.
So that's
always a question. But those are kind of the big name guys. You could also look at, you know, guys like Dwayne Dedman, who's on a $6 million contract, very manageable. And the Hawks might be looking to move off of him. You know, he's a 7-footer, who's been solid, and, you know, came on strong with the Spurs over the past couple of years, and, or just the past year, really. The Spurs got a lot out of him in 2016-17 season after he kind of bounced around. And then he, you know, signed that contract with the Hawks, you know, and he's averaging, you know, 10-7, which doesn't necessarily, like, you know, wow you, but he is a 7-footer, and you can kind of see what you have with him. Kyle O'Quinn from the Knicks, he's on a smaller contract, you know, only $4 million, then a player option for 4.2 next year. So maybe they can do something with that. But yeah, there's not a lot of teams that are projected to have cap space now or in the future. I think there's, like, seven teams that are expected to have over $10 million in cap space this summer, which is, you know, really low. The NBA as a whole is in a crunch. All these teams spent a whole bunch of money a couple summers ago, and the cap didn't go up, and so now everybody is basically cap tied and close to paying the tax. So if the Bucks are trying to get off of contracts, they're going to have to pay for it. They're going to have to give up, you know, picks, or they're going to have to give up young players who are on really good contracts in order to clear out some room. And so it kind of puts them in a difficult position going forward to try and navigate exactly what they want to do and who they want to have on the team while trying to avoid the tax in the future.
You know, this is purely speculative, Matt, but because the Bucks could not have signed Greg Monroe, but do you think there would have been some interest in him had they been able to sign him, you know, when he became a free agent?
I think there'd be interest.
Sure.
I think they might have been able to pay a similar amount. They have money from their mid-level exception, I believe, that they could have used to rival what Boston had, I think. You know, but I didn't have to think about it too much because there's a rule in place that says if you trade somebody, you cannot reacquire them that season. The earliest you can – it's actually for a year. But if they become an unrestricted free agent July 1st, then you can reacquire them once they hit unrestricted free agency. So once they traded him in November, they are no longer allowed to add him back onto their team until July 1st as a free agent. So, they'd be interested, but they made their choice to get off of his big contract for this season and, you know, go into the future with the certainty that they'd have Eric Bledsoe for this year and Eric Bledsoe for next year and try and build their team around that. So that's the way they wanted to go. But one other thing I forgot to mention, too, is that the Bucks don't necessarily have to do something here at the trade deadline. You look at Monroe as somebody who was bought out. There could be other buyouts. I mean, Brook Lopez could get bought out, considering he's in the last year of his deal, and maybe the Lakers are trying to trade him, but if they can't find a trade for him, maybe they buy him out in order to save some money and allow him to go play for a contending team and an audition for the summer in free agency. You know, and maybe they can be players there. You know, then I'm sure there'll be others. I mean, we've already talked about in the past how Andrew Bogut it was bought out and he's available. And, you know, he's someone that the Bucks have reportedly had interest in. He obviously played for the Bucks, was drafted by the Bucks, and is a big physical presence inside, a good screen setter. He's not somebody who needs the ball. And so he's someone who maybe the Bucks would be interested in, but you don't preemptively make that move to sign him until you figure out exactly what's on the trade market. And if you can clear a roster spot for him with a trade, and then he can just slot, you know, he or someone else, you know, there are other centers out there, he or someone else can get signed, you know, into that open roster space instead of having to, cut somebody, eat their salary, and then sign a center or anyone else, as a free agent. So right. That's another route they could go. It's a little bit of a lower risk, lower reward type situation because you know exactly what you're getting into for the amount of the contract for a lower price. But you might not get as high quality of a player as you might get via a trade where you'd have to give up more. So that might be an avenue they go. It'll be really interesting to see. Because they're on the precipice of this like really important summer where they have to decide, you know, what they're going to do with Jabari, and that's going to have ramifications for how they build this team going forward and how talented they could be and how high they can achieve. Right now, they're, you know, having won six of their past seven, they're at the five spot in the Eastern Conference. They're a game and a half behind the Cavs, who are in third. They're right in the thick of things. And, you know, if they can, I think over their last five games before the trade deadline, before the All-Star break, three of them are against teams with losing records. Two of them are against the two worst teams in the Eastern Conference, the Magic and the Hawks. So, you know, at the very least, if they can go 3-2 during that span, they'd be 32-25 at the break. and definitely in position to challenge for a top four seed, which is exactly what they wanted to do this season.
Absolutely. And I'm going to throw this out there. It's not related to anything we're talking about, but breaking news on my phone, Matt. Justin Timberlake will play his first Milwaukee concert in 15 years at the new Bucks Arena next year. So there's that.
So at the very least, there's going to be that entertaining performance at the new Bucks Arena next year. That is for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No matter who's playing center for the Bucks, no matter if Jabari Parker's back or not, Justin Timberlake, he will be there.
We got JT, and he was pretty good at the Super Bowl halftime show last night, I thought. But anyway.
I was kind of bored by it. It was whatever. Yeah, I was like, I don't know what he's going for here. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a tough critic. but whatever.
So Matt, I leave for South Korea first thing in the morning tomorrow. I'm gone until February 27th, so I miss the All-Star game. I miss about 8-9 Bucks games. When I come back, they've got, I think, 22 games, 23 maybe left. Where do you expect them to be when I come back and we do this again?
Ooh, let me look at the schedule because basically the whole month of February. Well, the nice thing for the Bucks. Maybe for you is that they don't have too many games in February. That's one of the positives in terms of Malcolm Brogdon's injury. That if you're going to miss time, February is the month with the fewest games because you have that week long All Star break.
Right.
So he misses the least amount of games possible just by coming back, you know, getting hurt at that time. Which, you know, I guess that's a silver lining. But in that time they come out of the break with a game at Toronto. And then they are home for the Pelicans and the Wizards, and then you'll be back. So, you know, you're only missing, you know, these five games before the break and then three games after. And I think at least the Bucks should be 3-2 over these next five. At Toronto will be tough. Home against New Orleans is a game they should win. They were close against New Orleans in New Orleans. That was before Boogie Cousins got hurt. So you should theoretically be winners in that one. And then they've played well against the Wizards this year. John Wall still won't be back, though. Washington's been, I think they're 4-0 since John Wall got hurt. That'll be a tough game, but they've played well against him. So we're looking at maybe 5-3 in those eight games, you know, somewhere around there. That would be, I mean, a winning record is always – is always what you're looking for, anywhere over 500. And then the next day, on February 28th, we'll get to see the new-look Pistons with Blake Griffin as the Bucks make their last trip to Detroit of the season. So it's going to be a tough stretch coming out of the All-Star break. Looks like 1, 2, 3. Well, the first three games against playoff teams, Detroit might be a playoff team by then. And they got Indiana, Philly, Indiana, Houston before they get a nice little stretch. The Knicks, Grizzlies, Magic, and Hawks. So it's going to be some tough sledding there right out of the break, and the Bucks will have to kind of weather that in order to stay up in the standings. And, you know, like I said for you, I think in the games that they're gone, I think they can definitely be above 500 in those games, which is definitely in the right direction at least.
Well, I guess in the meantime, Matt, hold down the fort till I get back. Tell Giannis and Deli to tape their ankles really well. And hopefully Deli will be fine by then. I'm sure he will be. And it'll be fun to, I'll be paying attention from the road, at least trying to find, I'll be reading your game stories and your analysis and seeing how they're playing while I'm gone. And looking forward to coming back and hitting a lot of Bucks games with you toward the end of the season.
All right. That sounds good. And if you, the listener, want to be like Gary and read what I have to write on jazzintheline.com, you can do that. You could also read. Gary will have tons of stuff from the Olympics. You'll be churning out content every day. I think we have a special section on the website where you can read all the Olympic coverage and all the people from Wisconsin and just basically anything you want to know about the Olympics. Gary's got it. So you can read all that there too. And so if you're looking for our next podcast, it'll be sometime after Gary gets back. And you can find this podcast and all our others, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, basically anywhere you get podcasts. And we appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you guys probably next month.
Great, Matt. I'll see you in 3 weeks. Thanks.